Will you pray with me? Oh God, we don't know how to come, what to call you, light in our darkness, word that created us, presence of love, God with us, all of it. We hear you, we want to hear you and to see you more clearly. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts speak something of your word to us this day, the word you want to speak, the word we need to hear. O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Do you know the word ineffable? It's the kind of word that I scan over when I read it in a book, because I think I have some idea of what it means, but I'm not quite sure, and I don't want to stop long enough to find a dictionary. But finally, I looked it up. Ineffable. It means something that can't be expressed or described in words. Something with so much power that it cannot be spoken. Ineffable. Religious, spiritual experiences are often ineffable. We just don't have words for what happens inside of us. You know that feeling? You are moved to tears, maybe to action. You get an insight that makes perfect sense, something so powerful that it makes meaning out of everything else that you're thinking. You know it deep down, inside, as clearly as you know anything in your life. But when you try to describe it to someone else, you just can't find the words for it. It makes us feel tongue-tied and inarticulate. But it isn't a failure. It's just that kind of experience. It's beyond words, ineffable. It happened to John Wesley, who had enough words inside of him that he started the whole United Methodist movement. Once, years after he was ordained as a priest, he had a moment when he knew God's presence so surely that it turned his life around, made him stop doubting his faith the way he had his whole life up until then. But when he tried to describe that experience, all he could say was, "I felt my heart strangely warmed." It can happen in other contexts too. Have you ever tried to describe why you love your child or your spouse? I remember one moment in my life when I was so moved by love for another person that I couldn't find one more way to say it. I'd used up all the words that I had. Nothing quite captured what I felt. Finally, "I am you," I said. Now that's not true literally, of course. We're never completely the same as another person, no matter how much we love them. It wouldn't even be healthy to do that. I know that, and I knew it then, but I had no other words to express what I was feeling. And when I remember that moment, now decades ago, I can still remember how I felt, how it feels to love someone that much. An ineffable experience is what the gospel writer John is trying to describe in the first chapter of Jesus' life. Unlike his colleagues Matthew and Luke, John tells no story of Jesus' birth. There's no manger or angels, no adoring shepherds, no wise men from the east. For John, the details of how or when Jesus came to be weren't so important. What seemed critical to John, what he wanted us to understand before we know anything else about Jesus' life, is that everything changed when Jesus came into the world. That someone was here, a person who lived and died like normal, but this person was different. So different that after him, nothing is the same. In this first chapter of the gospel, John is saying, I can't really explain it, but it's as if I wasn't even alive until I knew him. As if nothing was alive until he came. Everything is different now, as if real life, life that makes sense, has just begun. It's like the whole story of creation has to be told again. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him. And without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life. And the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. We hear, we are supposed to hear in those words, an echo of the creation story, the first chapter of Genesis. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. There is just no other way to explain this ineffable thing. You can get a little twisted up if you try to analyze those words as if they come from a textbook. Jesus is the Creator, there beside God from the very beginning. No, wait, maybe Jesus is the Word. What God meant when he said, let there be light and plants and animals and humans. No, maybe Jesus is the light that was created way back then and that has a light that has risen like the sun every day since then. Or maybe Jesus is the human that God had in mind when he set out to create something in his own image. Which is it? What is the true thing that John is trying to tell us with all of these images that are wrapped into the beautiful words of this first chapter? The answer is yes. Yes. Every one of those pictures every one of the pictures those words paint tells us something about who John knew Jesus to be. And every one of those explanations, and all of them together, is still not enough to describe what happened. There are no words to explain fully that God himself has been here. With John, with us. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory. From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The Greek verb that John used and that's translated into English as lived among us is actually a little more colorful than that. It means something like pitching a tent, moving in. God took up residence with humanity, moved into the neighborhood, is how Eugene Peterson translated it. The life of Jesus means that God chooses to leave the safety and comfort of some distant corner of the universe to come live here. Not just for long enough to make some announcement, but to live inside this sanctuary, outside this sanctuary, under the eaves, where people who have no other place to go take shelter from rain and from the cold, in warehouses with building code violations, in the chaos of Aleppo, in your apartment or house, in your messy family. My friend Jordan makes a sort of game for himself every day to try and make someone else's day, to do something for another person that's unexpected, and that will take a regular or maybe even a bad day and make something good out of it. So a few months ago, Jordan was in his regular restaurant in Truckee where he has breakfast often. And there was a table of seven men sitting over near him. They were all having breakfast together, enjoying one another's company. And as Jordan left that day, finishing before they did, he paid their check. He bought breakfast for all seven of those men. So what he did is trying to make the day better for them. And he didn't say anything to them as he left. And the next time he came back into that restaurant, he was kind of overcome with greeting from the wait staff, who all came around him and they said, "What did you do?" Well, it turns out those seven men, when they realized that someone had paid their check, they gathered up all the money they had among them, it was about $200, and they left it as a tip. And the wait staff took that money and they divided it up among themselves, including the bus people and the cooks in the back and everyone who was there in the restaurant. And then there was still some money left over. And they used it all day to buy breakfast for other people. Now, I'm not suggesting that Jordan is Jesus. I'm not even suggesting that we all should be like Jordan and do that necessarily. But I want to be one of those guys who knows that his breakfast was paid for. Let us see when grace comes to us. Because when you have received something that feels like grace, it changes you. It changes what you know you are capable of doing, the way you feel about giving yourself away to others. It changes everything. That's the kind of experience that John was trying to describe. Now, John says, I see. See it with me, he says. God isn't some disembodied spirit that watches or judges or even sympathizes as we worry and lose our way and struggle in this life. This God is personal. This God is in human life, in your life, in a way that is close up and intimate and long-term. This story is as much about giving us a new picture of God as it is about Jesus. You might say that God's love for us is ineffable, that God couldn't adequately say it in any other way, not in nature or in the Bible or in voices of angels. The only way God had to communicate it fully was to become human himself. I am you, God said, totally at a loss for words. In a way that God could not express in any other way, God speaks love by coming to live this life with us. God has been us. God is us. And God is saying, I want you to know me. This is who I am. When God is human, we can see who he is in a way that we have never quite been able to understand before. That this God is someone who heals and forgives and gathers up people that no one else wants, who knows personally what it feels like to live through betrayal and pain and humiliation and fear of death, who prays for the people who hurt him, and who keeps coming back for us no matter how far we wander away. Theologians have argued for centuries, and Christians are still all over the map about who Jesus actually was. Was Jesus God? Was he the Son of God? Or a person who was just like God, or what? John is clear. The answer is yes. In this one human life, we see God present, real, a God who gets, really gets family and friends and work and holidays and how hard it is to remember what's important and what's not. Jesus is like God. Jesus is God. It doesn't really matter how you say it or what makes sense in your head. What matters, what will change everything, is knowing that this story is still being written, as true today as it was when John tried haltingly to put it into words. God is, God has always been, like Jesus, like us, here in this life, from birth to death, in it for the long term, fully engaged in this life, in your life, so in love with creation, with you, that there really are no words for it. And that changes everything. Amen.